Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We do come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., also Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also stream at richarddugan.com. The link is right there on every single page there on the upper right-hand corner. You can't miss it. I'm the guy there with the hat. I'm working on the horse. Maybe one of these days. I'm looking forward to our programs every single week as we bring these programs to you. And I want to remind you that some of these programs are longer than what you might hear on the radio. Usually we allocate about 50 minutes, that's 50 minutes, for an interview on the radio broadcast, the terrestrial radio broadcast. However, usually my guests and I chat a little bit longer than that, sometimes 10, 20, 25, 30 minutes. We've actually had an interview that went an hour and a half. And you're going to need to go to the website. You're going to need to go to the radio show's page and to that link to play that interview to get the full thrust of everything that was talked about. And also click on the link to our guests' websites. We want to pass that on to you as well so that you can search and research and investigate what they're saying, what they've been saying on the program, and see if it resonates with you. And if it does, we encourage you to check it out. We encourage you to go there and take what works for you. Don't take what doesn't work for you, okay? Not a wise thing. I am not a nuclear physicist, so I'm not going to be taking any tools that have anything to do with that. However, I do know how to use a hammer and nail and a wrench and what have you, so I would be taking those tools to do basic household repair. With that in mind, we also want to let you know that if you'd like to get in touch with us, not only through the website, there is an email address that you can send us information. You can let us know what you think of the programs and our guests. In addition to emailing our guests and letting them know what you thought, I'd love to hear from you as well. TMYS at richarddugan.com. TMYS, that stands for Tell Me Your Story. What a coincidence. TMYS at richarddugan.com. Today's program, I'm very excited to have on our program the author of Living an Awakened Life, The Lessons of Love. And my guest is Master Charles Cannon, and he has put this particular work together, and I want to welcome him. He is a modern spiritual teacher and founder of the Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality. I like that. Master Charles, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure, Richard. Great to be with you.
This is going to be a lot of fun, I think, because here we are. 2017 is here on upon us, and it's just unbelievable what we've been through in the last 2 years here in the United States. You know, if we wanted to talk specifically, of course, about our election process, some people question the whole process, especially after this go around. But I have been getting some interesting insights as far as that's concerned. That, hey, you may not like the change that you got, but that's what you wanted was change. And so, you know, it's almost like you almost say flippantly, so deal with it, you know, and get over it. But what our guests have been saying over the course of time, regardless of what events take place, whether politically, religiously, educationally, economically, they are the birth pangs of, shall we say, a new evolution of man. And maybe not physically evolving per se, but spiritually, to a place where we can thrive in our lives, be happy, you know, be joyous more of the time than we are now. And I know that that's what you're talking about here in Living an Awakened Life. Love always seems to be the core of these conversations. So let's just get right to the core of it and talk about the context in which we're dealing here from a spiritual perspective, and that is how love will overcome all of these tumultuous events to take us to that next level.
Well said. And perhaps I could begin with saying that this time of the year for me and my community here is the anniversary of the Mumbai terrorist attack, which happened in 2008, of which we were part of that myself and a group of 25 of my students were there. Four were seriously injured, two were killed, and the rest of us were held hostage for 3 days. And in the aftermath of that horrendous experience, we appeared in the international media and expressed compassion and love and forgiveness toward the terrorists who murdered two of our very close associates and instigated this horrendous, life-negative, fear-based experience. And that message went out all across the world, and we got thousands and thousands of responses from people all over the world saying that, number one, we had inspired them, and number two, they wanted to know, how did we get to be the way we are, and how could they learn to be that way, too, in terms of loving kindness and compassion and forgiveness, even in the midst of the most challenging of life situations. And so in response to that, all of those people all over the world, I wrote the book previous to this one, which was called Forgiving the Unforgivable. And in the epilogue of that book, I said that for me, it all boils down to this, that we're here to learn how to love. And that is really the essence, so to speak, of our journey of life. And I often am asked about that. What do I mean by we're here to learn how to love? And I mean by that, that first of all, love is the opposite polarity of fear. And we live in a relative reality that our experience is always governed by two polarities. And for the most part, fear, the negative polarity, dominates the positive, the love polarity. And in order to create balance, which is essential to being whole as a human being and whole spiritually, we have to emphasize the non-dominant polarity. And that polarity is love. So all of our experience really has to be focused in learning how to live from a life-affirmative, truth-based, love-based perspective, and bringing that love and compassion and kindness, which is the nature of true reality, into our everyday experience. So first and foremost, we have to really learn how to love ourselves, to love the life that empowers us, without which we have nothing, and then to learn to recognize that same life, that same loving energy, and honor it and respect it in all and everyone that we meet. So again, to me, the primary focus in the evolution of individuated consciousness, which is all human beings, is, again, that we're here to learn how to love.
And that, for some, can be an extremely difficult task, especially when they start to share their experiences, the event that, shall we say, traumatized them. There's no way that I could forgive the men, and I'm not speaking from personal experience, but just as if it were the case, who crashed those planes into those towers in 2001. No way in the world would I ever, because they took out over 3,000 of our fellow citizens. And again, you can go down the list. So let's just say there is somebody who is listening who maybe had that experience as far as the September situation in 2001, let alone your own, because obviously you have you have come to a place of forgiveness of the people who perpetrated this act upon you and others, and unfortunately, two of your fellows were killed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How in the world? And I say this with all due respect and more sort of the devil's advocate. How in the world could you ever do that? Don't you understand what they did?
Yes. Well, first of all, forgiveness is not condonement, mm-hmm. right? By forgiving someone, you are not condoning the horrific act that they created. But it goes back to really fundamental spiritual principles or principles of universal law. And the primary principle is that we are each the creator of our reality. We're the creator of our experience. And whatever we think, whatever we believe, whatever stories we tell about who we are and what life is, flavors our creation, flavors our experience of life, our experience of reality. So we have to be attentive, most importantly, to our own minds. And all great masters and all great wisdom traditions have really taught that same message. They have said that, yes, you are the creator of your experience, and number two, most importantly, you are responsible for the experience that you create, and you can change that experience. So these are very powerful principles, and when we look at it in terms of this terrorist happening in the world, mm-hmm. I always look at it and go back to a quote of the Buddha. And the Buddha said, being unforgiving is like holding a burning coal in your hand with the intention of throwing it at someone else. You, however, are the one who gets burned.
Hmm.
So again, it shows us how what we harbor in ourselves flavors our experience. And in relation to the terrorists, if I could not honor the life that we all share, that empowers me, that empowers the terrorist, and respect that life, and understand that I cannot understand someone else's experience. I can't understand what motivates, what makes a terrorist. That's totally foreign to me. But I can understand that through all our experiences, we grow. And that means everyone. So the terrorist, through his horrible, negative, fear-based, miserable experience, somehow in his cellular evolution is evolving through that experience, just as I'm growing and evolving through my experience. So I have to first honor that life. I have to honor the journey that we all share. And then secondly, I have to say what I create in myself toward another affects me most powerfully. And do I want to live with that kind of conflict in myself and the stress that creates and the misery and suffering that will result from it? Or do I want to say no to that? I don't want to choose hatred. I don't want to choose revenge. I don't want to choose that fear-based experience, because if I do, to me, the terrorist wins. I become his disciple.
Mm.
So rather, I'm going to say to myself, no, I don't understand that experience, but I acknowledge that it's your experience, Mr. Terrorist, and I honor it as appropriate for you, even though I can't understand it. But I'm not going to choose it for myself. I'm rather going to choose love. I'm going to fill myself with love, compassion, and kindness, yeah. And I'm going to make that my contribution to our world.
And You know, it and sort of dovetailing off of that same subject, I remember the day, the days of this particular event, and I remember thinking that, and again, as you say, forgiveness is not condoning. But the first thought, one of the first early thoughts that came to my mind was, these people are pissed off. Why are they pissed off? Has anybody bothered to sit down and ask these people why they're so angry that they're willing to kill themselves and everybody around them? And nobody has bothered to do that. All we see and hear is the, you know, from our news media and our government officials is the rhetoric about how they've got to be stopped. And it's like, we need to, and I remember when I was watching the images on TV, I said, we have to handle this differently. We've got to handle, there's something not right about this. And we just handled it exactly the same way we always do. That's why I feel for extraterrestrials who might come to this planet, because they're in for a world of hurt, or maybe we are. If they can travel intergalactically, something tells me they've got higher technologies than what we've got, and we don't stand a chance. We need to humble ourselves is what we need to do. But that was the thought that came to me was, has anybody bothered to ask them why? And bear in mind, as I have begun to listen to the whys from different other sources, I do not agree with their methods, but I do understand in general, why, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I think it's very important to try to understand the whys of people's various experiences, the diversity of our unity, the diverse yeah. expressions of the one life or the one consciousness that we all share. And pursuant to that, I often look at forms of consciousness, forms of life, like human beings, as robots.
Mm-hmm.
Because we each have a software package.
Mm.
And I call it the software of your soul. And that software package perhaps includes all the history of our life experience, our experience in consciousness through multiple cycles of life, human and otherwise, and also includes our conditioning in this current life cycle. So we have to go back to in utero and look at the circumstances we were born into. What was our mother going through at the time we were in utero? What was our father going through? What was our birth experience like? What were the formative years like? What were our relationships with mother, father, family, siblings, and then onward into society and adulthood? And that enculturation period is very informative if you look back into it in yourself to see how you have written or added to the software of your soul that perhaps you are acting out in very unconscious ways. And then you can get great clarity about why your life experience is the way it is with you, the creator of it, and that particular software package and how it is operating in your experience. But in relation to the terrorists, thereafter, there was a lot of documentary films and television specials that were done on this group of terrorists, because one of them was captured and survived, and told the story of his childhood, that he was raised by a very impoverished people, and that he was sold to a madrasa, a religious, Islamic religious school, by his parents to pay for the dowry for the marriage of his sisters. And that from a very early age, he was indoctrinated. He was programmed in very extreme, violent Islamic extremism, and from there was recruited by an even more violent group that became the group 15 years later in his life, after he had been trained and groomed and programmed every day since his childhood to be one of the terrorists of the 10 who were selected like him, to be the robots, so to speak, who acted out that experience. So when you look into it and you see the programming, you see the enculturation, you see the background that someone has moved through, then perhaps you can understand why they act out the way they do, and then have even more compassion and understanding for them.
It almost seems contrary to even have that kind of compassion and understanding. And it seems as a nation, we always seem to have an enemy. I mean, the Cold War, on the one hand, it was a beautiful thing because we weren't really at war. We had spies and we had espionage and intrigue and all of those things, but we weren't really shooting one another. And that was a beautiful thing. You know, it's like, gee, those were the good old days, in a manner of speaking. But as soon as that enemy was vanquished, it left a vacuum. And the vacuum was filled, or at least, you know, and I don't know all of the ins and outs, and that's not really what we're trying to accomplish here. But needless to say, I know there has to come a point in the evolution of man on this planet where we no longer have an enemy. I understand the arguments philosophically about the dualism of this world, and that we, some say we need them, and it's just a natural part. And I say, well, but if we came from the one where there was no dualism, and we're going to the one where there is no dualism, then why can't we have no dualism here? Why can't we just be? See, just being who we are, there's no dualism. We just are who we are. Am I right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Let's call it an illusory dualism.
Okay.
From a truthful perspective of reality, if we are experiencing a dualism in terms of a separation between subject and object, meaning me as a subject experiences you as the object as completely separate and different from me, that is illusion. And in the evolution of individuated consciousness, that illusory dualism comes first, because it is said that we first have to experience what we are not, so that within a relative construct thereafter, we can then experience what and who in truth we are. So the first stage of evolving human and individuated consciousness is the stage that is called egoic. And the ego-driven mind generates an illusory duality. It separates subject from object and does not recognize that both subject and object, both relative polarities, are the same consciousness. Mm. Clay and clay pots, no matter how many different shapes you shape the clay into, are still essentially clay.
Mm-hmm.
So the essence of all and everything, call it life, call it consciousness, is both subject and object. You and me, in the ground of our being, are the same consciousness. Well, if the egoic instrument creates that illusion of separation and we are identified with that, then we create conflict. Conflict is the result of separation. And conflict then breeds stress and ultimately suffering. So that conflict then, egoic conflict, is experienced in the majority of the humanity of this planet in our current times. And the minority is experiencing what is called the trans-egocentric level of evolving consciousness. And that is that point where you are full in the experience egoic. You are full in the experience of illusion. And you have now awakened from that. You've had enough of an awakening experience to recognize that separation and difference is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And you have opened to the trans-egoic experience of the oneness of life, of the oneness of consciousness. And now you are evolving ever more fully your wholeness into the truth of who you are and what life is as a unity in diversity, one consciousness, one life, expressing itself, manifesting itself, experiencing itself through all its forms, through the theoretical 50 billion simultaneous universes that we are currently aware of. Mm. So this whole evolutionary process from that perspective is an intricate process, but a necessary process, because all experience is relative. We can't ever experience what we are except in relation to what we're not. We can't experience the truth except in relation to the illusion. One polarity can dominate the other, but it can't eliminate its opposite, or we have no experience.
You cannot
have. So once we begin to understand it, then we can perhaps walk more wakefully, more consciously, more truthfully, where our feet are, and journey the journey as best we can.
It's the example I've heard many times of light and dark. You cannot have darkness unless there is light to cast the light, and then subsequently you find a barrier that then casts the shadow or the darkness. And I remember going through this philosophical conversation with someone about, for example, God and the devil. And I said, "Well, no, wait a minute. Let's back this all the way up to the beginning. Not the Big Bang per se, but who created Lucifer? God. Okay. And he created all of the other angels and archangels, da da da." And again, this is all based upon the traditional teachings of the ancient writings. So whatever Lucifer does from the time of his creation to the present day, in a manner of speaking, if you want to really put it on the responsible party, this is all on God, because he set all this in motion. Okay. Now, I am not abdicating responsibility for my life and my actions. Okay. By any means, by any way, shape, or form. However, I remember I was challenged. Someone said to me, "Well, yeah. Well, what are you going to say on the day of judgment?" I said, "Okay. Well, that's a very good question, and I know exactly what I would say. If in fact there is a day of judgment, I will stand before the Creator and I will say, okay, on the one hand, I did the very best I could with what I had, and so I take full responsibility, and you know, you're going to do with me what you will. So I have no control over that, because if I didn't measure up, you know, I'm toast. However, in the final analysis, because you created me and you're omniscient and you knew exactly how this was all going to play out, this is all on you." They did not like that response at all. And I understand that a lot of people, they just, it's like, and I love the argument that many people would use, you know, either you're pregnant or you're not. You're not a little pregnant. So either you're 100% responsible for your life or you're not. And you can't say on the one hand, "Oh my God, the devil did this over here or made me do that." And then over here, when things go great, "Oh, thank God those things happened." You're thanking God not because he did it, but because you did it and he kind of made the way. Well, wait a minute. Logically, for me, that's just my intellect is starting to run those things. But going back to the dualism aspect and what you're saying in that regard, I really am excited about the prospects. I know that a lot of people, have struggled, and some still are, through this whole process that we just went through in November of 2016, and trying to decide, okay, who's going to be our next leader? And shock of all shocks, this is how it turned out. And I've heard some very interesting conscious responses to that. you know, not political and so on and so forth, but that the people wanted change. Okay, they didn't specify what kind of change they wanted. They just wanted change. They were tired of the status quo. Guess what? You don't have the status quo anymore, at least not at this particular point in time. We, you know, only time will tell. But the realities are, and this is where I, and as I'm listening to your words, I'm going, boy, I've got to take a look myself, because I didn't want this guy because he represented every bully that I had to deal with in school. And so up went all of that stuff, all that energy. But then as you're starting to talk about that energy, that negative energy that's generated, I'm sitting here going, you know, that who is that helping? It's not helping anybody. It's hurting me. Mm-hmm. And so I need to, as Michelle Obama said, I need to take the high road here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not in a sarcastic or flippant way. Literally, I need to take the higher consciousness road. I need to look at the big picture. I don't know what it's going to be like in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the road. Nobody does. We do know, at least we are hoping, it will be different. How different? We don't know. But we know it's not going to be the same as it has been. And so to look at that and project upon it that love that we have within ourselves, in our souls, I think, you know, that's kind of what I'm hearing coming from you. In this specific instance.
Yes, you're correct. My perspective is gleaned from some of the most ancient of philosophies of life on the planet, mm-hmm. and the holistic models of reality within those philosophical systems. And what I like about the most ancient of them is that they say, yes, the ground of being, the substratum of all and everything, is one consciousness, one life, and yet it diversifies itself. It expresses itself through myriad manifestations and myriad forms, and basically life happens. It is a creative energy, and you can't determine nanosecond by nanosecond how it's going to create itself next. How it's going to show up. It's just going to creatively, spontaneously keep manifesting itself. So let's call that the happenings of life. Mm-hmm. Life happens. And then in relation to life happening, moment by moment by moment, what is my responsibility? Well, if I'm truthful, I have to be a witness. I have to say, okay, can I simply watch what is happening? Can I watch the happening of life, the happening of consciousness, and remain aware that it is the happening of consciousness, the happening of life, which is a creative, intelligent energy driving not only me and this whole universe, but multiple universes that I know of. Mm-hmm. And if I can be a witness to that and hold that truth, then the next question I have to ask is, okay, who am I choosing to be in this very moment in relation to the happenings of life that I am experiencing? Mm. If that's an election of a president or whatever it may be, who am I choosing to be? That's my responsibility. Yeah. So I can take the road less traveled, or I can take the road most traveled. Mm-hmm. And the road most traveled is to start telling stories about it, what it's going to be, how terrible it is, how horrible it is. It should be other than it is. But the truth is, it can't be other than it is because it is the way it is.
Exactly. Now.
So rather, what the other approach is, the road less traveled, which says, wait a minute, I stay out of my stories about it, and I just watch and I hold a positive, truthful focus and make that my contribution. I say, okay, this is the happening of life. How am I going to flow with this? How am I going to remain truthful in relation to it? How am I going to remain life affirmative and love-based and kind and compassionate and peaceful in relation to this? Mm. And once I have determined that and I can hold that position, then that becomes a very powerful contribution that I am making to my world.
I would like to ask you in reference to that, and yes, it is sort of a specific example, and there's nothing wrong with that. What about someone, so even such as myself, who, okay, I'm reflecting on your words, and I'm beginning to understand that, you know, I could have done more service to myself and people around me if I had taken that position of being the observer, being in that higher consciousness space rather than, as you've kind of put it, the road most traveled rather than least traveled. Okay, I did that. How do I go back and rectify that, or do I really need to?
Do you really need to rectify it?
Do I need to go back and clean it up, fix it? You know, I put out those energies like that. I was upset and da-da-da-da-da. Do I need to go back and make amends, if you will?
Yes, if you have shared that experience with other people and you have contributed to their experience, the flavoring of their experience, and you have had an epiphany about that, then it would be truthful to say to those people, hey, I just want to call your attention to this. I've had this epiphany, and I've changed my perspective. And insofar as heretofore I shared with you my perspective, and it was perhaps a little negative or a little fear-based or wasn't really based in true reality, mm-hmm. and now I have a more truthful perspective, I'd like to share that with you as well.
Mm.
I think that's just responsible, conscious living.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. I think as we come to those awarenesses, you know, it's it's along the lines of the 12-step programs. I know there's one step in there where you make amends. You go and you apologize to the people you've wronged. And yeah. And I think that can go a long way as well, because I do know that one of the things that was observed was the divisiveness. And I mean, we were divided in more than just two parts. I mean, we were fragmented, and it's going to take some time for those fragments to coagulate once again into understanding. But I think from what I'm hearing, that is a real possibility, that is something. And we may not rally around a person per se, but we may rally around, again, that consciousness. And I think that's extremely valuable. When we come back, Master Charles Cannon, I would like to talk also about the Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality. I would use the word synchronicity, but from my perspective, I actually use the word coincidence, but I don't pronounce it that way. I pronounce it coincidence. And I'd like to talk about that and your foundation and its creation as well as its goals when we get back. We're talking with Master Charles Cannon. He is the author of Living an Awakened Life, The Lessons of Love, here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm sitting here talking with my special guest here on the program, the author of Living an Awakened Life. His name is Master Charles Cannon. He is also the founder, a teacher and founder of the Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality. And I like the title of that. Just as especially the aspect of synchronicity, because I know that a lot of people, they like to dismiss away certain events in our lives as if, gee, if only I had done this, this would not have happened. And what we don't realize in our own lives is that a lot of times these things have happened for a very specific reason. And sometimes we find out what those are, and sometimes we don't, and we just have to keep moving forward. I know that in my life, I've had, I have these wonderful little tweaks, if you will, in my imagination from, I guess my higher self, if you will, that give me what are called deja vu images. And so for me, what's happening is that I'm being given an image of the future. And then when I get to that point where I'm going, you know, I've been here before, those images are telling me you're on the right track. Just keep on going. I know a lot of people, they are very mystified by it. But now that's my interpretation of those images. But when it comes to these kinds of events that happen, what could be called coincidence or coincidences or synchronicity, usually we don't know until after the fact. But there have been some great television programs, and I don't know that you watch that much television, but over the years there have been some really fascinating programs that start out showing multiple events going on, say, in a city or in multiple cities. And throughout the television program, these lives start to intersect. They don't all come together, but they intersect. And you begin to get an idea of how our lives are intertwined, how we affect and affect one another. To me, that is like the epitome of synchronicity, that you're doing your job, Master. I'm doing mine. But we're sort of both working towards the same goal, even though we may not be consciously aware that that's what we're doing. We don't see the big picture. Talk to us about that.
Exactly so, and well put. In terms of the oneness of all life, the one consciousness that is the substratum and the ground of being, through all its forms, through all of its manifestations, it is the same consciousness, which means that it is interconnected and interrelated. There is no separation. So more and more through your life experience, as you grow in wholeness and out of fragmentation, what do you recognize? You recognize that interconnectedness, that interrelatedness, and you move from the illusion of separation and competition into the truth of one unified life or one unified consciousness and the experience of cooperation. And I think these are beautiful evolutionary patterns in consciousness itself. I sit here as we're speaking in my office, which sits up on top of a mountain that is surrounded by trees in all directions as far as I can see, mountains and trees. If I sat here and I looked at the trees outside the window and said, I'm separate and different from them, then I would have a very limited experience of myself and the trees. But if I rather acknowledged that me and all these trees share in essence, are empowered by the same life energy, then every one of those trees multiplies me and magnifies me to myself. I am not only myself in this human form, I am the form of all these millions and millions of trees into infinity, and I have connectivity and interrelatedness, and that expands my awareness and opens me to the oneness of all life and the beauty of that intrinsic oneness and its essential nature, which is a benevolent energy. We say that consciousness or life in essence is a loving, joyous energy. Life energy is really in and of itself happy for no reason. It is its very nature. You can't separate intrinsic joy and intrinsic love from the experience of life if you are truthful. And so when you are able to open, as you are calling our attention to that truth of the oneness of life and the intricacies of its happening and the relatedness of its happening, you're moving into a unified, truthful perspective of life, as the ancients called it, one blissful consciousness. Mm. And that's a more classical, orthodox representation of holistic philosophy. But nevertheless, it is time-honored and true, even in our modern times.
Tell me about your path, and correct me if I'm phrasing this incorrectly. Tell me about your path to masterhood.
Very good. First of all, I was raised in the south of the United States. And in southern United States, if your father's name is the same as yours name, your name, like Charles, your father's name is Charles, your name is Charles, they don't call you Charles Jr. in the South. They call you Master Charles.
Ah.
So from my earliest years, we had an African-American assistant in the house who helped my mother with household chores and things. And she was like a nanny to me, and she kind of coined that name for me from at a very early age. She always called me Master Charles. And that became kind of a nickname in my family. Even, you know, at a certain point, you're supposed to grow out of that and just become Charles. But in my case, it became a nickname, and everybody just called me Master Charles. And still to this day in my family, they refer to me as Master Charles, although sometimes now they've shortened it to MC. But that was the original roots of it. And then years later, when I had my most powerful awakening experience, that was in my early 20s. And I awakened in conjunction with the photograph of a very great Indian guru at the time. And someone showed me a photo of him, and it unfolded this massive awakening experience in me that lasted for several hours and then never left me thereafter. And so, to make a long story short, I journeyed to India to find this man because I knew that the experience was that profound and that this man had something really to teach me. And I went to his ashram. He was a very well-known and famous guru in India with thousands and thousands of devotees and disciples. And I became his closest Western disciple and stayed with him for the final 12 years of his life and was really trained under his thumb. But when I reached a certain point in my own actualization, evolutionary actualization, or holistic actualization, he initiated me into the monkhood of Hinduism, and then thereafter began to send me out as an ambassador for him, to represent him, to teach in his place, to give empowerment, etc. And as that was happening, one day he was sitting to me, and when you are initiated, you get a long Sanskrit name, right? Mm-hmm. And I had been given this long Sanskrit name, so my name had changed again. He said to me, we were sitting there one day, and he said, what's your name? And so I gave him my new Indian monastic Sanskrit name. He said, no, not that name, your original name. And I said, my original name was Charles. He said, no, it wasn't Charles. What was it? And then he looked at me, never having known this. I had never mentioned it to him, nothing. And he said, wasn't it Master Charles? And I said, how did you know that? You know, yes, it was. He said, that's your real name. And
wow.
So it sort of came full circle into an acknowledgement that I was now masterful enough within spiritual experience to be a teacher of it, because that's what a master meant to him. A master spiritual teacher is one who can teach with words, but can also teach without words, meaning it's about your state of being and the amplitude of power of your unified state of being, and sitting in the presence of someone who is anchored in that wakeful, truthful, unified state of being is a very transformative experience. And that, in the classical Eastern traditions, is what really denotes a master. So in that context, through that experience, he was really acknowledging that in me and empowering me to step into that role more fully. And of course, I did. And now, 40 years later, I'm still expressing it as best I can.
Can you share with us the name of your guru?
The name of my guru was Swami Muktananda Paramahansa.
Really? Wow. My metaphysical primer was, and you probably already guessed it, the autobiography of a yogi.
Yes.
At the age of 17, I was introduced to it through Talking Books for the Blind, and it was on these 1 7/8 inch, 1 7/8 speed discs, the size of a standard record album. And I would listen to that book over and over again while I built models. To this day, I still have a copy that is on my phone. And when I put it on my phone, I remember reading an article about Steve Jobs, and that the only book he had on his phone was that book. But I have been surrounded by people, and I've come to, as I've traveled through my life, my short 56 years, I seem to run into more people who have a connection to this lineage, if you will, to this teaching, to this philosophy, if you will, not only through the SRF, but also through another foundation organization here. I don't know that it's based here in Santa Barbara, but there's a hermitage up on the hill. I believe it's above Montecito. The Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship. And also, they also trace their lineage back. It's a different branch, as they say, of the same tree. And I find it just so fascinating. It's like, okay, there. I haven't figured out the message yet, but it's like it's saying to me, there's a message here for you. There's something here. There's something here for you. You just have to figure it out. I'll figure it out down the road. But I just find it so fascinating, and I love the people who are affiliated with these different organizations, and the philosophy and the teachings and the stories. I still remember many of the stories, and because I read the book quite often. I think one of my favorites, of course, which you may or may not recall, is the one where Paramahansa Yogananda actually receives the gift of omnipresence for just a brief moment. I can't even fathom in my mind what that must be like. But it's just extraordinary. Have you studied you've had the trainings in much of this. And again, it's not a philosophy that is one to want to, you know, conquer the world, you know, convert all to this philosophy. I know that's not what it's about, but I do know that, You do have a fascinating spiritual life in that regard, having gone down this particular path.
Absolutely so. this path is what I refer to as the most ancient of the wisdom traditions. Mm-hmm. It's really the roots of the holistic philosophical systems and the holistic models of reality, which were the Veda and the Tantra, both vast philosophical systems. And they have really, in essence, informed all wisdom traditions and all religions. So I had to go back to that source. I had to go back to the original to learn and understand that pristine original truth, and that necessitated that I have an Indian guru or an Indian master. And Muktananda was very much a classical Indian guru who then was sort of one of the first of his level of gurus who ever left India and traveled the world and awakened thousands and thousands of people all across the world. Mm. So having that experience with someone at that level of mastery, at that level of evolution in consciousness, was very important to me, because you can read about it, you know, you can study it, you can be taught it through books, but until you've seen that state of being modeled in another human being, you can't really know it. And that was really important for me. I had to live with someone who was living that state of being, yeah, on a daily basis in all the circumstances of life, and to really understand it and know it from an experiential perspective over 12 years of my life. As I was able to do that, it became a living experience and a living philosophy and a living tradition for me as well, that actualized my own wholeness and informed my expression of it.
And I find it interesting, too, that you coming from the South, and the background that you did, that you went in that direction. But again, obviously, there was something in your programming, as it were, early programming, that said, when you see this image, this command will be carried out, and yeah, and away you go. And so I'm curious as to your perspective on our spiritual lives beyond this world, prior to this lifetime and even into the next, as to that extent, as either choosing to or being chosen to be used as an instrument of awakening and of love.
Mm. Well, a way of looking at that is through the archetypes of Jung, and it's brilliant work where he lists all the different archetypes in consciousness and then explains how different individuated consciousnesses, different souls, have different archetypes that they relate to and predominantly journey through all their life cycles in terms of evolving into the fullness of that particular archetype. And one of those archetypes, of course, is the master archetype, the awakener archetype. And again, it's like, if that's your archetype, that's your archetype. And it is going to consistently download and inform your individuated consciousness through all cycles of your experience. And as you keep experiencing it through all your cycles, you're going to bring it ever more fully into the perfection and the fullness of that archetypal expression. So not only do you see that in the master archetype, but you also see it in all of the archetypes that people journey, and when you understand them, then everybody's journey just makes so much sense. You know, it becomes so clear that they're walking exactly where their feet are supposed to be. They are journeying the experience that they are supposed to be journeying, that is important for them, and that they're at whatever stage of that journey they are. Then you see that everyone's experience is totally valid, that no experience is invalid, that everyone's experience is valid and has an intricate precision to it through multiple cycles, through billions of universes. This is the play of one cosmic consciousness of which we are an individuated part. And isn't that a magnificent experience? Hmm?
And I think to become aware of that is absolutely a magnificent experience. And I know that if I am able to have and maintain that awareness, okay, that goes a long way to making it through this world with, in a manner of speaking, with fewer stumbles, with fewer difficulties, as we started out talking about dualism, circumnavigating the dualism and getting on with teaching others how to live that same kind of life of fullness, if you will. I can't even think of another way of putting it at this particular
point.
Well,
you're talking about the title of my book,
yes.
Living an Awakened Life.
I knew we were going to come full circle.
But living an awakened life is exactly what we have just been sharing. And because to live with awareness is the measure of evolution in individuated consciousness. We grow in self-awareness. Why are human beings considered the superior species of this planet? Because we exhibit the most self-awareness. But ultimately, our awareness keeps evolving, and it becomes more and more holistic, more and more encompassing of the oneness of all life. And so those who are the most evolved among us do live consistently in that very wakeful, self-aware state, that's self with a capital S, self-aware state of the oneness of all life and the magnificence of the play of that one consciousness.
Well, I have to say first of all, this has been an extraordinary interview and conversation that we've had here, and I hope that people are really listening to the words that you are saying, and we'll take them in. We'll even go to your website. We're going to give that out in just a moment, and begin that process. You know, put aside all of the other stuff. Put aside anything that could separate you from another human being who has opposing viewpoints, whether it be political, religious, economic, educational, whatever category. Put those aside and know that we are, you and I, Master Charles, we are connected. We are one already, and we don't have to deal with the dualism here in this context at this time. There is no dualism. We're one. It's over.
Absolutely. Well said.
And so I encourage you folks to investigate, to go to the website. Matter of fact, do me a great favor here and tell me where on the internet we find you and this wonderful plethora of information that you have to share.
You find me and everything about me and Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality at our website, which is synchronicity.org.
Synchronicity.org. Check it out. I have noticed one interesting thing, though, and you've obviously seen my photograph on my website. I noticed that you didn't do one thing that a lot of the masters do, and that is you haven't shaved your head, and you haven't lost your hair either.
I had a shaved head for many, many years when I lived in India. But my master asked me when he, shortly before he died, long before he died, actually, but told me when he died, would I please return to my country and modernize and westernize this ancient and time-honored truth of life that he had taught me. And so when I returned to my country, I shed my orange robes and my shaved head and dressed in Western clothes and looked like a Westerner to fulfill his request that I westernize and modernize and make this experience available in the Western world to as many people as I could.
I applaud you for what you're doing. I also want to let our listeners know, in addition to synchronicity.org, you can also find him on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You can look up some of the talks that he has on these various subjects, and we encourage you to do so. Before we let you go, first of all, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us on this program. And I would like to offer to you the opportunity that if you should find yourself out here in the West, in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, that would be my pleasure.
And then we have three final questions for you before we wrap up the program. You know, I don't know why it just occurred to me, but I often use that word, we. I'm the only one here besides you. But somehow I have become plural, and there have been those who said, well, yes, you, yourself, and you. But be that as it may, the first question is, who is Master Charles Cannon?
Master Charles Cannon is simply a form of the same consciousness, the same life that empowers all and everything.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
My intention is to simply be as fully aware and awake within the oneness of life, the oneness of consciousness, as I can possibly be in each moment of its happening, and to truthfully share that experience with whomever I encounter.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose to me is the same as everyone's life purpose, and that is to be. And that statement, again, goes all the way back to the Buddha when he said that consciousness is miraculous because it can turn its awareness back upon itself and be aware of itself being. So to me, that is the evolutionary motivation in the whole of consciousness, to fully be in each moment of its happening.
I like that. Again, I want to thank you so much for sharing this time with us, and we look forward to having you back on the program in the near future to continue this conversation, be it in person or via Skype, as we have done today. And again, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure, Richard, and thank you for being such an excellent host. And may all blessings continue to shower upon you.
And I thank you for that. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.